good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here, not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to, they happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have on the line with us Dr. David Ayoub, and if we want calls, why, we'll certainly request them later. But Dr. Ayoub is a radiologist, but he spends a great deal of time researching what's going on in the world as far as certainly influenza vaccine, as far as many other issues dealing with medicine today. And, you know, I had a fascinating interview earlier today with Dr. General Dallaire. And he had been in charge of the forces in Rwanda at the time of the terrible slaughter that took place there. And as we talked to him about his book, Shaking Hands with the Devil, he was commenting that there were certain things that really bothered him about what happened. Not only the terrible slaughter and the suffering, but the thing was that the rebel forces, the Tutsi forces, could have come in very early on, 100 days earlier, and stopped the slaughter. And they did not. They waited until 800,000 people had been hacked to death in a most horrible and gross manner. And, he just didn't understand. It didn't make any sense what he'd witnessed, this wanton slaughter. And here was a group that could have come in, had the military force, had the capacity. After 800,000 people had been slaughtered, then they moved in. And the question he still has, all these years later, 11 years later, is why did it happen? Well, I can't give you all the answers, but I can tell you that there are people who have a different view of the world, and there are people who have no human compassion. And with that as the background, Dr. Ayoub, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Glad to be on.
Well, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story here, because you've been doing some fascinating research.
Well, I've got a lot of things that we can talk about. I think probably what's been heaviest in my mind recently is some really bad news that occurred last week on a couple of fronts. Have you been informed about the Defense Appropriations Bill that was apparently signed into law now on December 30th?
Yeah, we're talking about the one that now has removed the protection that everybody has in case they or their family are injured by vaccines. It's like giving the vaccine manufacturers, the right to kill. They can do whatever they want to. They cannot be held responsible. That is the most irresponsible legislation. And why Senator Frist would put that in the middle of the night, why the senators would not demand to be taken out, and why the President of the United States would sign that legislation in the name of, we have to protect the vaccine manufacturers, because if we don't protect them, why, they're not going to make vaccines for us. That is totally irresponsible. I would not take a medication or a vaccine from a manufacturer who demanded that they be given immunity no matter what they did. And how irresponsible they were. Why would anybody want to take a vaccine or a medicine produced by a company like that?
Well, you're absolutely right. It is probably, just so far-reaching and so unconstitutional, and probably many of your listeners even may have heard about this superficially and really no idea of the full scope of this. And I don't think it's entirely too late, because we had something like this a few years ago in the Homeland Security rider that Senator Frist put in the 11th hour, just like this one. There are some actions we can take, and I'd like to give your listeners a website they can go to. And,
go right ahead.
It is ACHAMP, www.a-champ.org. You can sign up, and it gives you a vehicle to send letters to your legislatures, your media, U.S. senators and congressmen, and tell them you want this to be repealed.
All right, fine. And so give that one more time the website.
www.a-champ.org.
All right, fine. And so basically what we need is a massive campaign all across America to reach our legislators and let them know that we hold them personally responsible for this totally irresponsible and, I think, very dangerous legislation.
Absolutely. And you asked why the congressman might have supported this kind of a bill. Well, there was a very interesting report last week produced by the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights. And they calculated that 42 senators, the most of which were Republicans, have held pharmaceutical stock worth between $8 and $16 million in 2004. These were senators who supported this passage of this bill. Frist himself has received hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions, of course, from pharmaceutical companies. So there's clearly pharmaceutical industry's reach is far-reaching and, unfortunately, into the pockets of many of our legislators.
And so I think it behooves every one of our listeners to go to that website, and we'll give that out again before the hour is over, and certainly to just contact your legislature and demand that they get this repealed, because that's what happened when they tried to sneak this through in the middle of the night on the Homeland Security Act, and there was an outcry across America that they had to pull it back. I mean, it was embarrassing to our president, that this was going on. And after all, he was trying to make everybody believe he was this fine Christian gentleman, so concerned about people, so honest, and certainly would never sell his soul to the drug companies who gave him so much money when he ran for the presidency. I think it's about time that we just let the people there know that we know what they're doing. So one more time, the website.
That's www.a-champ.org.
All right, fine. Well, let's go ahead. So I hope that every one of our listeners will go ahead and write to their senator, call their senator, fax their senator, and email their senator and let them know.
Yeah, thank you very much. This bill is going to obviously allow the use of thimerosal, the mercury-containing preservative, back into vaccines. And it's not just vaccines that are deemed necessary for pandemics such as the flu vaccine.
Hold that thought for just a moment as we bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, Dr. Dave Dayobin. Of course, he's very concerned about the legislation that was snuck in to the Defense Appropriations Bill in the middle of the night by Senator Frist, and I'm embarrassed to say that he's a physician. And, of course, it was basically to protect the drug companies and the vaccine manufacturers so they could not be sued, no matter how malicious they were, no matter how negligent they were. And if you are killed or damaged or somebody in your family is killed or damaged, why, you will not be able to bring a lawsuit against them because the federal government, in the name of protecting the people, is going to protect the vaccine manufacturers. And believe me, we've got a lot of the finest politicians in Washington, D.C. that money could buy. And among them is Senator Frist, who has a blind trust which he personally directs and invests and sells stocks. How could you do that in a blind trust? Well, don't ask foolish questions. After all, you're not suggesting that the majority leader in the United States Senate is a crook. I have no question he's a crook. And the fact that he would put this in the middle of the night, you don't put something into a legislation in the middle of the night after it's already gone through all the committees and there's no discussion on it, unless you're trying to sneak something over in the American people. And this could be a deadly, deadly action. So one more time, the website to go to so that you can email your elected representative.
That is www.a-champ.org.
All right, fine. Go ahead, pick up the story, David.
Well, you were just right that the pharmaceutical industry will be immune from not just liability, the usual amount of liability, but there's rhetoric in this bill that would make them immune to even willful misconduct or even gross negligence. So it's just extraordinarily far-reaching. It will nullify any of the state's laws which have already been passed, such as the one in Illinois that bans thimerosal from vaccines.
And, of course, we have the same thing in California.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is going to really frighten you because you've covered this so well in your programs in the past. Julie Gerberding from the Centers for Disease Control told Tim Russert on a recent Face the Nation program that they were even considering using MF59, which is a squalene-containing vaccine preservative, in the flu vaccines for pandemics.
Well, let me tell you, any of those of you who have not yet read the book, Vaccine A, which we do carry, and we have a four-tape set on Vaccine A, about the squalene that was used experimentally on our Gulf War veterans, and so many of them, about a third, somewhere between a third and a half the veterans of the first Gulf War are ill today. Do you really want to take a chance with your family? If you have not read the book Vaccine A, or certainly heard our four tapes set on that, you need to understand. And, of course, it was all related to squalene, which was put into experimental vaccines that were given to our troops without their knowledge. And would you believe it? The government is denying that, although Tulane University tested specimens, and I think four out of five of the specimens of the vaccine specimens were tested had squalene in it. And the FDA did exactly the same thing, and they found the squalene. It's really a mineral oil. It was actually very similar to mineral oil. They tried that in the early 1950s with about 40,000 troops. And so many of them died and had a profound mental degeneration after that, that they gave that up. But they're coming back again, and you have to ask yourself, why would anybody do that? But then why would the troops there, the Tutsi army in Rwanda, hold back 100 days when they could have gone in and stopped the slaughter of 800,000 people? And, of course, if you heard the interview, and if you haven't heard it, hopefully we'll have General Dallaire with us on Friday, why he infers that this Tutsi army was being financed by the United States government. But go ahead.
Well, I mean, can you imagine the scale of chronic illnesses that could be produced if every American citizen was forced to get a bird flu vaccine containing this kind of an agent? It's just unthinkable.
And you have to understand, to see, with these products, you get all sorts of autoimmune disease. You get lupus, you get thyroiditis, you get rheumatoid arthritis, you get progressive neurological abnormalities. And these are well known. In fact, if you look up the symptoms of Gulf War illness, they are the symptoms of autoimmune disease.
Exactly. So we really have to fight this bill. No question about it. I just hope it's not too late. But we'll just have to see.
All right, fine. Well, I share your concern, and I hope our listeners do as well. But at least it's been going out on over the media. But I think there has to be an organized campaign, and we will be having you on all of our programs to bring this information out.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, now, of course, you've been looking into something. I read the article that you wrote about the government recommendation. Of course, it was picked up at the American Academy of Obstetrics and Gynecology and by the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommending that every pregnant woman get an influenza shot during the pregnancy. Now, what's wrong with giving a pregnant woman an influenza shot? Certainly we don't want them getting pregnant. We don't want pregnant women getting influenza, do we?
Well, you would think not, but it really depends on what it means if a pregnant woman gets influenza. I mean, is it a serious risk to the woman or the pregnancy, or isn't it? So it's a little hard to answer that question unless we really have full knowledge of what that disease means. And we researched this, and now actually I have a personal reason to research this, because my wife is in the middle of a pregnancy, our first child, and our first office visit to the obstetrician, while the first thing that came out of his mouth was, you know, the CDC recommends the flu vaccine.
And I hope you told him that you didn't.
Well, I handed him a 40-page manuscript. So I think he wasn't expecting that one. But, you know, he was very happy and comfortable to quote the CDC, and it was almost as if he was saying, well, I don't really have to do the thinking. The CDC says this. It's not my idea. It's the CDC's idea. And I can tell you that he didn't even know that there was mercury in these vaccines, and he certainly hasn't been really updated. And I would suggest the majority of obstetricians, not really being infectious disease specialists, know all that much about the influenza vaccine. But in part of preparing for trying to get a bill passed in Illinois and helping some other states, what we're really looking at today in mercury legislation are flu vaccine bills, because that's the last vaccine that still has a lot of mercury. So I reviewed the CDC policy very carefully, and I think it's almost an exercise in in understanding the level of subtle deception that's going on in our government healthcare agencies. And when I dissected the CDC policy, it's really quite appalling how misguided the recommendations are. The fact that they support their policy based on research that doesn't even support what they're saying. I mean, in some cases, it even says the opposite. But they don't expect physicians to grab the CDC position paper, read the references, pull them, check the CDC's work. And if they did that, they would realize how paper-thin these recommendations really are. And I think this example of the flu vaccine in pregnancy just illustrates what we're finding in other vaccines, and even, for example, the TB skin test, which I did several years ago for our group here in radiology practice. So I'll share with you some of the findings I found. And first of all, you should realize that the CDC doesn't recommend at this point everybody get a flu shot. They recommend it for individuals who are at high risk for complications. And those traditional risk groups are elderly individuals over the age of 65, particularly those who are in nursing home or chronic care facilities, those individuals that have chronic medical disorders, asthma, severe cardiovascular disease, or other chronic severe debilitating diseases like renal failure, liver failure. They really had not recommended it for pregnant women until 1995. Before 95, they suggested only women with these other severe underlying illnesses would get vaccinated. But since 95, when they first recommended it for third trimester pregnancies, there was this gradual increase in the strength of the recommendation during pregnancy. And I guess we've seen this in other areas before. Rather than having a sudden change in policy, they do this gradually. So a lot of people don't argue when this goes in gradual steps. We saw several baby steps. So currently the recommendation is all pregnant women, regardless of the trimester, even first trimester, and that's the time, of course, when the fetus is most vulnerable to environmental toxins, and that's the risk of spontaneous miscarriages and abortions are so high, so they generally advise not giving any injections in the first trimester.
But now they've recommended giving influenza vaccine at that time?
They started in 95. They added the third trimester in 95. In, I think, 97, they added the second trimester. And in 2004, they finally recommended all trimesters of pregnancy.
Now, of course, the one problem is that not all influenza vaccine has mercury in it, but the doctor's not looking for that. He's not looking to see whether it has thimerosal. So is there any a guarantee that a pregnant woman has that she's not getting a toxic dose of thimerosal? Is the doctor going to be concerned about it? Is the CDC concerned about it? The CDC has recommended that it be taken out of all childhood vaccines. So why would you give it to a woman who has an immature fetus in her womb who is much more susceptible to the tremendous doses that he's going to be getting? It's going to get far more thimerosal in its mother's womb, body size, than it would even in the nursery the day after birth.
No, you're absolutely right. And the CDC's position paper didn't even make mention of a preference towards thimerosal-free influenza vaccine, which is really taking several steps back from the 99 position when they sent an urgent press release with the Public Health Service and the American Academy of Pediatrics urging that all childhood vaccines that contain mercury be eliminated, even removed from shelves. But it's, two steps back, one step forward sort of thing.
All right, so basically then they came out, they recommended that if we take out of childhood vaccines in the United States, but left in childhood vaccines, that we send to the rest of the world. Now, why if it's dangerous for children in the United States, would you leave it in the childhood vaccines for the rest of the world? And then why would you then recommend that it be given to all six-month-old children and the elderly? But even more frightening is, why would you recommend that it be given to pregnant women in the first trimester when her child will be getting toxic doses of mercury? I mean, we'll be talking more with David Aob about this. Dr. David Aob, frightening thing to contemplate. Well, David, we've had a number of calls suggesting we're not getting a very good reception on your line. Would you mind hanging up and we'll call you right back?
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, fine. If Dr. Aob's going to hang up and we're going to have our special producer go ahead and get him again. But I think that's very important, ladies and gentlemen. that you ask yourself, why would the CDC be doing that? Well, I will tell you that I have personal experience with the CDC. I was involved with them when I spent 10 years trying to get the AIDS epidemic dealt with as a public health issue rather than a political issue. I went to the CDC headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia, and I will tell you I ran into some of the most evil people there. Today, over 500,000 Americans are dead. Over 1 million are infected, and most of them will die. And I lay that directly at the hands of the people in the CDC, and although Dr. Geberding was not at that time at the CDC, she was in San Francisco, pushing all the wrong agendas and doing everything, in my estimation, to block the implementation of the effective public health techniques that could have saved millions of lives, not only in this country, throughout the world. Why, you know, she then, of course, was promoted for her fine work in San Francisco, to become head of the CDC. Certainly this does not give me great feeling of confidence, knowing that she is at the Centers for Disease Control. The Centers for Disease Control has done everything they could to cover up and conceal from public examination the material that they have, and they have extensive records, they have extensive analysis of the relationship between thimerosal and the epidemic of autism we have in the United States. And for those of you who do not know, 1 in 6 American children either has a neurodevelopmental abnormality or a behavioral abnormality. By neurodevelopmental abnormality, we need learning disorders, speech disorders, reading disorders, ADD, ADHD, Asperger's disease, or frank autism. So, David, we've got you back. Let's see if that sounds any better.
How am I now?
Well, let's try this and find out how it goes.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
All right. Well, we were talking about the CDC's paper, position paper on influenza vaccine, and how really subtly deceptive, and maybe sometimes not so subtle. And we did dissect their paper. This is an annual publication on prevention of influenza, which they update their scientific basis for their recommendations and so forth. And I think the first question I would ask if I was going to get a flu shot is, how risky is this shot? Now, in terms of pregnant women, what is the outcome to pregnancy, both the fetus, the delivery, and the mother, if you get an influenza infection? Why is pregnancy a high-risk situation? And they cite two papers in support of their claim that getting influenza infection while you're pregnant constitutes risk for higher complications than a woman who wasn't pregnant and got the infection. The first study they published was a study in Britain, United Kingdom, at the University of Nottingham, I believe, a group of researchers, when in fact, when you pull the paper, they couldn't find any adverse outcomes in women who were pregnant and got influenza. Only about 11% of the women in their clinics had blood evidence, serological evidence, or antibodies against influenza. So a small percentage got even the infection, and most of those didn't even have symptoms. They did list in their paper a list of quote-unquote complications from infection, but none of those complications...
Hold that thought right there, David. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have Dr. Hayu back again, and we're talking about the fact that the CDC now recommends that every pregnant woman in the first trimester will get a flu shot. Now, of course, the flu shots, most of them are going to contain thimerosal because most of the flu influenza does. There are a few of them that don't have it in there. But, of course, you have no guarantee you're going to get that. And unless you specifically ask for it, you're not going to know one way or the other. Your doctor is not going to know because he's told there's no danger to thimerosal. Now, certainly for our listeners, the Centers for Disease Control and the American Academy of Pediatrics and several other government agencies actually recommended that thimerosal be removed from all childhood vaccines back in 1999. But go ahead and use up all of that you've got out there. You know, go ahead and give it to the kids, even if it is going to damage them, but go ahead and give it to them anyway. But after about 2003, we did not have thimerosal, which is a mercury compound, which is so toxic you cannot put it on the skin. The government has said, oh, you can't put that on the skin because it's so toxic, but it's all right to inject it into the children. Anyway, after taking it out of the childhood vaccines, they left it in both the influenza vaccines, and which they're recommending now for six-month-old children. They're recommending it for the elderly, and there's no evidence it does any good in either one of those. But even more frightening now, that's being recommended for women in their first trimester. And so Dr. Ayoub is simply pointing out that the CDC uses several studies to justify their position. And one of them is an English study. And go ahead and describe what that English study really shows, because it really doesn't show, even though it's used by the CDC to justify the position, does it really justify their position?
No, it doesn't. And it's very funny because the authors of this paper wrote me and told me just that. They found that influenza infection had no impact on labor outcomes. It had no impact on the health of the newborn in any standard measurement whatsoever, preterm labor, APGAR scores, and so forth. There were certainly no mortalities associated with this whatsoever.
In other words, if you got influenza, it wasn't going to do any harm.
It was no big deal, and they laughed when I told them that the CDC used their paper to establish policy in the United States, and they wrote me back and said, well, you know, here in the United Kingdom, we do not vaccinate women in pregnancy, so I certainly can't dictate what the CDC uses to support policies, but we wouldn't agree with those policies. But yet their paper is in the CDC statement as support of a policy of widespread vaccination during pregnancy.
All right, so there are two papers. One of them is the English study, and the English certainly have not changed their policy based upon this. They don't vaccinate women because they know it's a hazard not only to the mother but to the unborn child. So what's the other paper?
Well, the other paper was done here in the United States, I think in Nashville, Tennessee, but it was a Medicare population, or Medicaid population. So a population which we know has higher comorbidities, poor health care, obviously. The authors of this paper found hospitalization rates during pregnancy with influenza infection ranged from 3 per 10,000 women months to about 10 per 10,000. So really a relatively small number of women actually got hospitalized, but they actually included, in the third trimester, they included the time they got hospitalized for the delivery of the baby, which obviously inflated that number. They still, even in high-risk patients, and a lot of these patients had diabetes and asthma and so forth, they didn't find any mortalities in women. They didn't find any mortality to the fetus. So they found basically what the British found. The authors were able to calculate, and adverse outcome was hospitalization. In other words, going to a hospital, getting admitted overnight for observation, perhaps IV fluids, perhaps some antibiotics. The CDC was able to estimate, based on this paper, that they could prevent 1 to 2 hospitalizations for every 1,000 women vaccinated during pregnancy.
No, because they were using with a very, very select group of people. They were Medicaid recipients. This was not the general population.
That's right. And why the CDC didn't look at a more,
representative.
More typical representative population, but those studies are out there. In fact, that study was done in your neck of the woods at a Kaiser Permanente, which is what, Northern California study, looking at tens of thousands, and they found absolutely no difference in hospitalization rates.
Now, whether they got their influenza shots during pregnancy or whether they didn't.
Whether they got their flu shot or not, and the rates were extremely low, hospitalization rates. So influenza is not a big deal in pregnancy in general.
And yet that was the justification that the CDC used for making this recommendation. But what is the dose of mercury that unborn child is going to get?
Well, it's a guesstimate, but it's huge. It is huge. 25 micrograms is what the mother is going to be exposed to. The fetus in second trimester is going to get more than that share, because it's concentrated in the fetus up to 3 to 4 times higher. So based on the EPA limit, the mother is going to get 3.5 times the EPA limit. The fetus can get 250 times
Hold that
the EPA
thought.
Limit.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and so Dr. Abe is estimating that in the first trimester of the child, of the unborn child, the fetus, if you like to refer to it as that, I call it the baby, but they will get up to 250 times the maximum allowable dose of mercury. Now, I don't think that any dose of mercury is safe any more than I think that any dose of lead is safe, but assuming that the EPA is correct, they're getting 250 times the maximum allowable dose according to EPA standards. What does that do to the brain of this unborn child?
Well, obviously, the early in development that you're exposed to a neurotoxin, the more severe the potential outcome. And we know from the childhood vaccines, we're just seeing huge numbers of neurodevelopmental disorders, particularly autism, but a variety of other, in fact, even more frequent learning disabilities, speech disorders, delayed in hitting developmental milestones, attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. But I think in a relatively small number of cases of mental retardation could also occur with high doses, particularly in women with other cumulative doses of mercury that is really not taken into consideration in a lot of these studies. For example, if a mother got an amalgam placed during pregnancy, an amalgam is going to excrete, in really the first several weeks, it could get excrete up to 10, 20 vaccines a day worth of mercury, inhaled and swallowed. If a woman had high diets in tuna and so forth, they could have a pre-existing load of mercury. And studies have come out, again, supported by EPA researchers, that's shown about 7 to 8% of newborns that are born today have fetal or umbilical cord mercury levels at levels already at which neurodevelopmental damage can occur, brain injury can occur.
Now, these are government studies?
These are government studies.
So what is the government doing in response to their studies that show that the child may be at risk?
They're warning the mother not to eat tuna fish. That's what they're doing.
But, of course, they're telling her, you really, of course, you must get this because, you know, if you don't get your influenza vaccine in the first trimester, why, you might get the influenza.
That's right. There's one other, you know, really worthwhile issue of deception in the CDC numbers, and it's not just pertinent to the pregnancy data, but it's also pertinent to anybody who's getting a flu vaccine, particularly elderly people. We are told through press releases and through CDC statements that there are 36,000 annual deaths from the flu.
Hold that thought there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening, Dr. David Abe. And certainly we're talking about the CDC's recent recommendation that every pregnant woman get an influenza vaccine, and most of them are going to contain mercury, during the first trimester, not only mercury but aluminum, and all of these terrible things that we know create so many problems in the elderly, 1,000% increase in Alzheimer's disease, according to Dr. Pudenberg studies. But here they're going to give this to the pregnant woman in the first trimester. There are no studies. And the studies that the government shows, why this has to be done are totally invalid. And I really think that Dr. Aob has contacted the people in Great Britain who did the study that the CDC quotes to justify its position, and they thought it was ridiculous. In fact, they said that there was no justification for using their study to justify the CDC's position. But you see, most people aren't going to go to the authors of the papers that the CDC uses. Most people don't check out the things. We have almost blind obedience. We have almost a blind spot. If the government says it, it must be true. Well, I'd like to suggest that if the government says it, you better check it over and over again, because in all probability it is not, because there are people working in the government who have a different agenda, who have a different world view. And that is why, in my opinion, according to the CDC, 1 in 6 American children has either a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality. So go ahead, David.
Well, we're talking about the overstated death statistics from influenza, and I think this probably is the reason why a lot of elderly people get in line to get a flu vaccine, and in fact, really, why a lot of physicians recommend the flu vaccine, because they believe these statistics are real. I'm going to show you
what the CDC's own databases show. Now, the National Vital Statistics System is part of the CDC, and they log a number of statistics on American health issues, but mortality issues are broken down by category. And you can find this quite readily on their website. And I have a summary table here, and this is just looking at the 5 years, from 1997 through 2002. They list, and it's very odd, they list as cause of death is deaths, influenza and pneumonia combined together. And that's a little odd thing to combine because, as you know, influenza is a seasonal viral infection, and pneumonia, you know, can occur in a lot of for a lot of reasons. And most of the cases, perhaps, are bacterial in patients that go to the hospital. AIDS patients get pneumonia. People that get chemotherapy and are immunosuppressed. So really, you're lumping together two different categories: apples and pears. Even the numbers they give in these 5 years are between 62 and 91,000 deaths. But if you look a little closer at their tables, they actually break that down, separating. They separate influenza from pneumonia. And if you just look at cases of influenza, the number of deaths plummets. The influenza deaths in this five-year period that I looked at ranged from 257 deaths to a high of 1,765 deaths.
There's a lot of difference between 257 to 1,700 and 35,000, which is what they use, or the figure of 65 to 95,000. What's that old saying? Figures don't lie, but liars figure?
Well, it's even worse. I mean, I'm just getting started with those numbers. Now, not all of those cases are laboratory proven. That includes cases in which they had positive cultures or viral testing in a laboratory, and those cases in which it was just clinically suspected to be an influenza death. If you look at only the viral culture positive cases, the number of deaths in this period ranged between 18 and 99.
So, and based upon that, we should give every elderly person and every six-month-old child an influenza shot?
That's right. Unbelievable. Now, if you look at you can still get more specific data from the CDC's website, and they break it down by ages. So I looked, and I want to know how many deaths occur in reproductive-aged women. I couldn't find out how many women who are pregnant got influenza and died, but they do have age brackets. So this is potentially pregnant women. And I picked the brackets from 20 to 39 years of age. And between 1999 and 2002, for viral proven cases, I found no more than one case per year. 0 to 1.
So that doesn't sound like we have a terrible threat in America, especially in that the age group of childbearing women.
Well, it's unbelievable. I mean, when you're doing a risk-benefit analysis, the potential benefit is to lower, eliminate the one death in the United States by vaccinating everybody. You know, that's absurd. But what's even more absurd is if you look at the VAERS database, which is the CDC's passive reporting database for adverse vaccine reactions, you can actually search and see how many deaths have been reported from as a cause of the influenza vaccine. And in age productive women in the same category, 20 to 39 years, which I put in the database search engine, I found 19 reported deaths since 1990. So that's about 1.5 deaths a year. And now that's a passive reporting system, and you can probably multiply that figure easily by 10 to maybe up to 100. So we may have, you know, a couple hundred deaths from the vaccine.
And, of course, we know that people get Guillain-Barré and all sorts of autoimmune diseases are directly referable to these vaccinations, and specifically the influenza vaccine. I know that Dr. Len Horowitz's mother took the influenza shot, developed a Guillain-Barré disease, progressive paralysis, and then died, a direct result of that. So, you know, these things are not without potential for harm. And yet, of course, the government is doing everything they can to get everybody vaccinated. And you have to ask yourself, why are they doing that? And why are they so intent upon getting every pregnant woman vaccinated in the first trimester? Well, are there any studies to show that it's safe?
Well, there are studies that have been that the CDC says were performed and show safety. And again, we've talked about level deception. I think this is probably in the CDC paper one of the biggest levels of deception. They quote a study And this is right out of their recommendation. It says this: one study of influenza vaccination of more than 2,000 pregnant women demonstrated no adverse fetal effects associated with the influenza vaccine. Now, that statement, if you just looked at that, you might think, well, it sounds like a pretty reasonable study, 2,000 women, doesn't give you much detail. And that study was published, the first author is Heinonen, and the paper I pulled was actually titled The Outcomes of Vaccination with Polio Vaccine and Influenza Vaccine. Here's what they found. They actually, the paper was more about polio than influenza, but I normally wouldn't talk about polio, but the paper showed that polio was causing cancer. They found this. They only looked at children up to 1 year of age after the polio vaccine. There's over 18,000 women that got the inactivated form of the polio vaccine. There was about a doubling of childhood cancer rates at 1 year of age, and there was about a 12-fold increase in neurogenic tumors at 12 months of age. And the authors concluded that the polio vaccine, when given to pregnant women, causes tumors in their children. They only had one sentence on influenza vaccine safety during pregnancy. Now, can you imagine, of all the papers you've read, Dr. Stan, there would be one sentence?
And what was their conclusion?
Their one sentence on this said, among 2,291 mothers immunized with killed influenza vaccine during pregnancy, one child developed an astrocytoma from the spinal medulla, part of the brainstem. So basically, they only looked at cancer outcomes.
And in other words, this had nothing to do with what the CDC says that it had to do.
You wouldn't have known what the autoimmune rates were. In fact, you don't know what the mortality rates were. They didn't record death.
They do know that if you give a pregnant woman the polio vaccine, their children are going to have a dramatic increase in cancer. So why does the government still do they still give the polio vaccine to pregnant women?
Well, I think it's infrequently. I don't believe it's contraindicated. It's just that's not the typical time that women get that vaccine.
But I think that everybody should realize that there's definite relationship between, the polio shots and cancer. Now, how long ago was that paper published? Do you recall?
Yes, I can look at my reference sheet. It wasn't too long ago, and it was published, it was a while ago, International Journal of Epidemiology in 1973. But the funny thing is, this paper was actually looked at by the Institute of Medicine a few years ago, the Immunization Safety Review Committee, when they were looking at the association between SV40 contamination of polio vaccine and childhood cancers. They looked at this study and concluded the study was flawed based on the epidemiological design. So they rejected this paper, yet the CDC embraced the paper because they found influenza vaccine during pregnancy was safe.
Even though it really didn't say that at all.
No, one sentence and very obviously very narrow scope of follow-up. So many papers, so much research is designed not to answer all of the questions. And how can research do that? And the Vioxx example is a perfect. I mean, there was a report that reviewed the Vioxx papers, and they found 240 papers that looked at Vioxx complications. And only five of those 240 papers looked at cardiovascular outcomes, and only one of those papers looked beyond a few weeks. The longest follow-up for cardiovascular complications was about 26 weeks, if I recall. So none of those papers, even though there was 240 quote-unquote safety papers, none of them would have looked at long-term complications, potential long-term adverse events.
Well, there had to be some studies, because certainly when Dr. Graham testified before Congress, he pointed out that there were some studies that did show adverse effects, cardiovascular disease. In fact, the original Vigor study showed something like he said 7 times increase in cardiovascular abnormalities, and Dr. Graham actually had done his own study that showed a dramatic increase in cardiovascular insults, either heart attacks or certainly strokes after taking Vioxx, and the CDC wouldn't allow them to publish it.
A lot of that stuff wasn't published. It was known. It was known to researchers, but many of those things were obscured in the research or just simply unpublished.
And you have to ask yourself, first of all, why would Merck do that? Second, you would have to ask, why would the National Institute of Health and the Federal Drug Administration allow this to happen, unless, of course, there was another agenda? Well, anyway, let's get back to the influenza, because I think this is really such a fascinating subject, and you've done such a great job. And you've actually written a paper on this, and has this been submitted for publication?
It's been submitted, and it's being considered.
All right, fine. And I've read the paper. It's really fascinating that Dr. Abe goes into all these studies that the CDC quotes to tell you that, you know, that vaccination, influenza vaccination in pregnant women is perfectly safe. And none of the studies show that. But how many people are going to actually check the studies? The average doctor doesn't have the time to do that. And certainly the average researcher is just going to say, well, if the government said it, it must be true. Maybe we ought to start seriously questioning many of the things we're being told by the government about lots of things.
Well, yeah, I think we should. And unfortunately, it took me, a point in my life where I was working part-time, and I actually had time to do this. And I'm ashamed to say that in my, day-to-day work of working 60-plus hours a week, I wouldn't have time to pick up journals and read details in the results section. I mean, I barely have time to read the titles and the summaries of the research papers. So it's a big chore for physicians to dig deep and really analyze an issue. We have been taught, and I think you would agree with me from your days in training, we were really taught to trust the system. In medical school, how many essays do you write? Not very many. We are given a stack of books that say, here is the truth. Memorize the truth. There will be a test on the truth. And, from those days of training, we're so overwhelmed, we're just trying to learn facts, and we have a trust. It's empirically believed by medical students and residents that, what's here is the truth. We're not taught to dissect and think very constructively about whether this data is accurate or not. It's just assumed that it is true. So this is a tremendous hurdle for clinicians to overcome. They really have to, one, have some reason for doubt and have the time and inclination to dig up a matter.
So, I know exactly how you feel, because I know when I was involved with analyzing the AIDS epidemic, I refused to believe that there was anything sinister about the fact that we were not addressing the AIDS epidemic as an infectious disease. We were not trying to stop it using standard public health techniques. And it really took me better part of a decade to finally come to the realization that AIDS is being used for population control. 500,000 Americans are dead. Half of those are homosexuals. And then, of course, throughout the world, at least 30 million people are dead, another 50 million infected, and it's totally unnecessary. We know how to stop these epidemics. We saw what they did with SARS. They were able to bring it under control in a relatively few weeks, but we've never tried to stop the epidemic. The AIDS epidemic, and you go to Botswana, where today 42% of the pregnant women who come in to be, they're tested before they deliver, 42% are HIV infected and are going to die. That is either the greatest public health failure of all time or the greatest and most successful genocidal policy. And I'll just leave it with our listeners. What have they done faced with this failed policy? They're going to continue the same policy. Go ahead, David.
Well, I guess the last thing in this review of the CDC policy that's worth mentioning, talking about deception, is what they do talk about the risks of the vaccine. If you looked at the manufacturers of the flu shot and read their package inserts that comes with the vaccine, you will hear almost identical statements from all the manufacturers. They state that the flu vaccine has not been tested in pregnant animals, that the effects of pregnancy, the adverse effects to the mother or to the developing fetus are unknown. It is not known whether future reproductive capacity of the mother or the fetus would be harmed by the vaccine.
Now, wait a minute. Despite the fact that the manufacturer says this, the CDC is recommending it be given?
You betcha.
And, of course, but there are animal studies that have been done with this product, haven't there?
There are animal studies.
And what do they show?
Well, there has been just volumes of research done with other forms of mercury, other organic forms of mercury, such as methylmercury. Thimerosal, which is in the flu vaccine, is an organic form of mercury known as ethylmercury. I did find a study, which is contrary to what the manufacturers say, that looked at the effects of thimerosal when given to pregnant animals. And this study was published some years back, I think it was in 1975, and it showed that when pregnant mice and when pregnant rabbits got thimerosal, even topically, even just on the skin surface, that their fetuses were aborted at rates as high as 20 times the control animals that were just exposed to saline. So the conclusion is, obviously, thimerosal causes abortions. It causes fetal death.
And so why would these, our government, why would the CDC be recommending that this be given to pregnant women within animals that produces abortion, and there are no studies to show it's safe? Will we find out 5 years from now that we've been killing the unborn children? 10 years from now, 20 years from now, as we did when we gave women the large dose of estrogen during pregnancy? We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. David, go ahead and continue this incredible, incredible story, because I think it's so important that people understand the animal studies are there, even though the government denies it. And you know what it does in animals. Why would you think it would do anything different in human beings? And if there are no studies to show it's safe in human beings, why would you possibly give that?
Well, that's a can of worms, but that's a good question. And I think it's that kind of observation that, you know, first got me really questioning the motivation behind healthcare agencies that were promoting just absurd policies with regards to mercury. And I think... When I learned of the reproductive toxicities, I think it feeds into what we talked about at your conference this fall. But the other study was published by an author named Batts that found that indeed thimerosal potentially could cause sterility and infertility in both males and females. The study looked at sheep trachea, and the trachea of a sheep, which is the major airway, is lined with small little hairs called cilia. And thimerosal, just after a few minutes of application to the surface of the trachea, completely arrested ciliary beating. And what's pertinent about that? Well, cilia are very vital to reproductive function, both in men and women. The sperm, for example, the motility of the sperm is due to this cilia structure, a very special protein structure that causes the tail to beat. It also is in the fallopian tube, which obviously is very important for female reproduction, for passage of the egg into the uterus. And you wonder what our infertility rates are going to be like 5, 10, 15 years from now when this generation of children that got huge amounts of mercury in early childhood grow up to reproductive age.
And I think that's a very, very good question. Is it possible that there is another agenda here? Are our leaders and the people in the CDC really that foolish, and or do they have another agenda? We saw their agenda with the Tuskegee study. Nobody was ever punished, but they recruited 400 black men for a scientific study. They all were infected with syphilis. They were told they were going to be treated. And for 40 years, they withheld treatment so they would die. And nobody was ever punished. And I've talked to at least one person who worked for the CDC who justified the study because it was in the name of science. And unfortunately, there are people who really do look at the world differently, aren't there, David?
Yes, there is. And would you like me to go into that discussion?
Well, I think that we'll have to do that when we get back, because okay, we're just about through this first hour, but the time flies so rapidly, so we're going to be back in just a moment here. I will bring you back for just a minute, because I want you to get your webpage out there, and then we'll have to let you go as we talk about things. Don't think about hanging up, because we'll be back right after the break here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and there's so much more to talk about. But anyway, before I let Dr. A go for at least for the first hour, although we will be back with this for the second hour, David, could you get your web page out there?
I don't personally have a web page. I have an email. I'd be happy to answer questions.
All right. How can people get in touch with you if they'd like to?
They can email me at raypoke, raypoke, at mac.com, mac.com.
Give that one more time.
Raypoke, R-A-Y-P-O-K-E, at mac.com.
Now, once again, that website to go to if you want to write an email to your congressman and let him know that you're upset about what Senator Frist has done to take the vaccine and drug manufacturers off the hook if they kill you.
That's www.a, www.freedom-champ.org.
God bless you, and thanks very much. And I will be talking to you very, very shortly.
Thank you.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we reach out across America 5 hours a day on the radio, certainly on the Internet 4 hours a day on shortwave and satellite. If you'd like to get our shortwave frequencies or listen to our Internet programs, our webpage, www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can now hear us 9 hours a day on Telstar. Our 4 hours of our programming are rebroadcast several times, so you can actually pick those up. And, of course, we have our friends at Joyce Riley, Chuck Grismire, and Pastor Butch Parr up there on Telstar 5. And if you'd like more information on how you can pull that down, along with the video and the other thing channels, give us a call of 1-800-544-8927, and then we ask you to tell other people about our programs, to let them understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western or Christian civilization, and there really are evil and wicked people out there. And if any of you doubt that, why, you can go to our webpage and radioliberty.com and pull down my article on the population control agenda. That's the population control agenda. And certainly we've given a talk called Planned Population Reduction. That's Planned Population Reduction. If you're interested in that, why, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then certainly if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, certainly my newsletter on Peak Oil 2 will explain to you why the price of heating oil and electricity and natural gas and gasoline and diesel are going up. That's Peak Oil 2. We'll be glad to send you a free copy. Of course, it is up on our webpage, but if you don't have access to the Internet, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send it to you. If you'd like to know what's really going on in Iraq, should we stay, should we pull out, or are both options equally bad? Because if we pull out, there's going to be chaos. If we stay, there's going to be chaos. Oh, well, that isn't a very good choice, is it? But then you were never to be given a choice. Our telephone number, if you'd like a copy of my article, Deja Vu in Iraq, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please don't call unless we have, we ask specifically for calls. We have with us again Dr. David Ayoub, who is a radiologist. He works half-time, and he does research half-time, and I'm certainly glad he does because he comes up with some of the most amazing material that begins to put things into clear perspective. And, you know, so many doctors just do not have the time to do the study. Most doctors don't understand the terrible toxicity effect of the mercury in the vaccines. They certainly would find it very difficult to believe that anybody would recommend a influenza vaccine for a woman in the first trimester of pregnancy, when it would be harmful not only to her but to the child, specifically to the unborn child. Or they would find it very difficult to believe that they would recommend giving it to a six-month-old child with toxic doses of mercury in it. They would find it would be very difficult to recommend giving an influenza vaccine to people between 60 and 65 years of age, knowing full well that if you take three or four shots over a five-year period, there's a 1,000% increase in the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And if you challenge that, you can give us a call, and we'll be glad to send you the page from Dr. Fudenberg's, the abstract from Dr. Fudenberg's website. Then you can look it up on your own, and Dr. Fudenberg is the dean of vaccinologists in the entire country who trained most of the people who are in vaccines today. 1,000% increase. Why would anybody suggest that we give the elderly a vaccine that really doesn't do any good, because the studies really show it doesn't do any good? To the elderly, it doesn't decrease the incidence of death significantly at all. But why would they do that? Well, go ahead, David. Why don't you sort of pick up your thoughts?
Well, I think we were talking a little bit about population control, or just touched on the subject. And I guess it occurred to me, when looking at the insanity of putting mercury, you know, my goodness, one of the most toxic substances known to man, in shots, injected into children and women. You know, one would wonder that is somebody intending to do harm? And in thinking about that, as an investigator might think about it, there's really a couple of reasons why would motivate somebody or an organization, an entity, to do harm. And one of them is obviously money, profit. Is there profit in hurting people? And sadly, the answer to that is yes. And that's, I guess, classic Machiavellianism. The drug companies can, if they could create disease, they obviously would be much more profitable because they have an expanded sales base. Mercury creates all sorts of problems. And, for example, you look at Eli Lilly is in a situation where they make money from selling thimerosal in vaccines up to the year, I think, 2010 through a licensing agreement. And they had the original patent on thimerosal. They don't manufacture it themselves anymore. They also sell a drug that treats ADHD. Strattera, last year, I think, made up to $700 million in sales for that company. So theoretically, that kind of a relationship is at least potentially, theoretically possible.
Well, it's very difficult, I think, for most people to think that anything could be that diabolical, that sinister, that, oh, they're, of course, going to ridicule people who say something like that and say, why, you think there's a conspiracy? Well, you know, certainly if you study history, there was a conspiracy to kill Julius Caesar. There was a conspiracy to kill Abraham Lincoln because they executed half a dozen people after Lincoln was assassinated. Why would they do that if there wasn't a conspiracy? Well, David, why don't you pick up your line of thought there?
Well, it's hard to prove that the industry and government are working together to put toxins into drugs to accelerate profits. But there's another line of investigation that needs to be considered. It's an even more difficult road to go down. And that is there an intent, is there a reason to put these in vaccines on purpose to reduce population? Genocide, in other words, the motivation to reduce the population. We've heard that term so many times. Most people will just discount anyone who talks about population control. But and you've really opened, I have to thank you for opening my eyes to this topic. And I think, you know, your show has played a big role in my research, because had I not seen the truth in the world, I would have not been probably even been motivated to even think these as possibilities when looking at vaccine issues, vaccine safety issues. So big thanks to you, Dr. Stan.
Well, I'm grateful that you actually heard and that you believed, and you picked up and run with the ball and gotten a lot further than I did, because you've come up with so much great research.
Well, thank you very much. I have to thank God for sometimes these things just show up. And I have faith in God, and some of these documents and some of these phone calls I get and letters and there must be a reason that some of these things are happening to me, and I'm just glad to try to tell the truth to what's going on, as I see it anyway. And I pray that everything I say is accurate. But certainly I've done everything I can to try to document, as you do on your show time again, to try to document some of the things that you're saying, because they are hard for the average person, obviously, to believe.
Well, I think that probably if anybody doubts that there is a population control agenda, we'll be glad to send them a page out of the Family Planning Perspective in 1970, where they talk about how are we going to cut back on population. One of the things was, well, we'll get abortion legalized. Remember, this was 1970, 3 years before Roe versus Wade. We will have the marriage tax. In other words, it would be more expensive to get married than, of course, to live singly. And have you ever wondered why we have a marriage tax? And then they talked about we'll put something in the water that will discourage fertility. We'll encourage homosexuality. Why would anybody want to actively encourage homosexuality? Very simply, because they don't reproduce and they die early. And there really are people who have an entirely different worldview. And if you'd like to see that page, we'll be glad to send it to you. And there's so much other information the National Security Study Memorandum 200, where the major thrust of American foreign policy was population control, 1974. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, Dr. David Abe. Why don't you go ahead and pick up your thoughts?
Well, I think there are a couple of documents for those people that doubt that there is a potential government agenda to reduce the population. There are two documents, even though they're lengthy, I think they're worth looking at. The first document is known as the Rockefeller Commission Report. And this is a report that was prepared for Richard Nixon. It was published in 1972. The author of this was John D. Rockefeller III. And let me read you a quote from this. Now, this was a paper that looked at U.S. Growth and how growth in the United States would affect U.S. economic future and the stability of the United States. It didn't look so much at global issues. A quote from this paper: after 2 years of concentrated effort, we have concluded that in the long run, no substantial benefits will result from further growth of the nation's population. Rather, the gradual stabilization of our population through voluntary means would contribute significantly to the nation's ability to solve its own problems. We have looked for it and have not found any convincing economic argument for continued population growth. The health of our country does not depend on it, nor does the vitality of business, nor the welfare of the average person. By its very nature, population is a continuing concern and should receive continued attention. Later generations and later commissions will be able to see the right path further into the future. The key statement, in my opinion, is this: in any case, no generation needs to know the ultimate goal or the final means, only the direction in which they will be found. So in other words, the Rockefeller Commission report suggests that population growth would be no advantage and very likely a disadvantage. And the means at which population control or reduction would be achieved don't have to be told to the American people. a really chilly conclusion, and this is an upper-level document given to the President of the United States. That is available on the Internet. If you just Googled Rockefeller Commissioner Report, you'll find a number of agencies that have this full report.
And, of course, I think it's so important that people understand there is an elitist a group. These are people who have an elitist mentality. They think they know what's best for us common people. It has been led for many generations by the Rockefellers and their friends. And as David Rockefeller told Congressman William Dannemeyer, some men are born to rule, most men are born to be ruled, and that is the attitude of the elite. They really are there. Of course, David Rockefeller was chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, I think, for over 20 years. So, and of course, this was really the ruling organization, still is the ruling organization in America. We do have a ruling elite. They control both political parties, and they think they know what's best for us and for the rest of the world. And they're using America's wealth and America's military power to force their views on the rest of the world. So pick the story up there, David. You mentioned there were two articles. Is there another one?
Well, the one that you've mentioned, the NSM 200, stands for the National Security Study Memorandum 200, also known as the Kissinger Report, and that was published 2 years later, 2 years following the Rockefeller Commission Report.
That would be 1974, over the signature of Henry Kissinger, who just happened to be working for Nelson Rockefeller at the time.
That's right. Apparently, he had been a protege and worked under Rockefeller for quite some time, well before this report was issued. And this was issued at the request of Richard Nixon. But instead of looking at U.S. population growth, it looked at the impact on the U.S. of a global population growth. Other countries, particularly the lesser developed countries, it's several hundred pages long. But the conclusions, basically, as you can guess, are this, that they felt that there were frightening, unprecedented growth rates in the world, particularly the lesser developed countries, which were growing much faster than the developed countries. This would potentially threaten very seriously the U.S. economy, particularly in imports. It would risk a global destabilization, and I can't emphasize enough the urgent tone in this document. They felt that measures would have to be used to reduce fertility immediately, starting immediately in the 70s. And ironically enough, as you'll see here, in the early 70s, a lot of things got put into motion, particularly with vaccine development. The goals of the document, the goals of this commission, were that they wanted to see a replacement fertility, and that is, by definition, I think it's about 2.1 children per family on average. They want to see this replacement fertility in developing countries first. In other words, the United States first, and then address that in the developing, lesser developed countries, which is a little interesting. You thought they might have had an opposite timeline for that. They did identify target nations, which we'll talk about. They enlisted the support of multinational organizations, not just one nation. They emphasize the legalization and availability of abortion. They mentioned that there should be financial incentives for nations to adhere to these population reduction programs. They blatantly talked about propaganda that would use in the population to encourage them to want to reduce family size. And they even suggested that coercion would be used, particularly through lending practices from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Now the question is: Has this kind of a concept been implemented? And I think the answer is very likely it has been implemented. And this is the connecting dot that I've had between these documents nearly 30 years ago and today. What we're seeing not only just in the United States, but an expansion and a really heavy funding of international vaccine programs. And I'll give credit to Lisa Regan, who is a writer for an online magazine called Byron Child Magazine, and this article could be found on the Internet by Google searching it. The article was entitled A Dragon by the Tail. And in this article, which was just basically criticizing the Mercury vaccine policies, there was a mention of an organization in here called GAVI, G-A-V-I, and that stands for Global Alliance for vaccination and immunization. And I thought that was a little unusual because that's a Bill Gates Foundation, and I had read some things about Bill Gates with regards to his interest in population control, and I thought that was odd that somebody who was interested in population control would also be so heavily invested financially in an organization which would seemingly be the opposite of population control, that is, improving health. And let me give you just a brief outline of what Gavi is. Gavi is an alliance of numerous organizations whose goal is to immunize 70 of the poorest nations in the world. And they're going to do this exclusively to improve health through vaccines. They don't appear to have anything else to do with anything other than injecting children in third world countries. They're involved in essentially all arms of vaccination program, research, implementation, government rewarding, and so forth. Now, it's funded with a huge amount of money that shows just how serious this is.
About how long ago did Gavi get started? Do you have any idea?
Yes, it was launched in 1999.
Okay.
And there were a number of other organizations like Gavi that had been set up really going 15, 20 years back, but they've, you know, faltered. They weren't well organized, and you can imagine how difficult it might be organizing entities like the World Bank and World Health Organization and CDC and other government agencies. So Bill Gates took the bull by the horn and funded this with about, I think initially, $750 million. The current commitment right now, and in Europe this fall, just gave several billion dollars. So there's an over $5 billion of money committed with a goal of $12 to $15 billion. So this is just an enormous amount of money for one purpose, vaccines. Again, just one type of health care provision, and that's vaccination. The kind of vaccines they're giving, very typical, some atypical, yellow fever, which we don't hear too much here, but the polio vaccine, hepatitis B, diphtheria, tetanus pertussis, Haemophilus influenza, and so forth, and they're researching things like HIV vaccines and the rotavirus vaccine.
Well, of course, now these would actually contain, at least the childhood vaccine would contain the thimerosal, because even though they took it out of American childhood vaccines, they left it in the vaccines that are going to be given to children throughout the world. So we are poisoning those children with thimerosal. Why would you take it out here and leave it in going overseas?
Well, good question. They must want that, and the World Health Organization is on record in a minutes that were acquired through free. I don't know if it was Freedom of Information Act. I think it was actually. I heard that story recently. I understand it was a hacker. I don't have firsthand knowledge of hacking, but the memo that was from a meeting in Geneva, the World Health Organization leaders were on record saying that they were going to encourage the use of thimerosal, and they were going to promote the use of thimerosal in vaccination, and they would lobby health ministers in these countries to use it under the seemingly guise that it was a great preservative, which in fact we know it's a lousy preservative. But, you know, why? I think that's the theory. The theory that we're testing really is mercury, a population control vehicle, potentially. And I think the answer we know from, you know, the research you cited in the flu vaccine paper is it is. It does lower fertility rates. It has the potential to sterilize both men and women. Number of studies on amalgam-related issues. Dentists or individuals with a lot of amalgams in their mouth that have infertility, we know there's a direct correlation between the amount of mercury that's found in seminal fluid and the sperm function, sperm count, sperm motility, and so forth. We know that children who got teething powder with mercury in the early 1900s developed pink disease, and those children, now adults, have a much higher incidence of sterility, men and women.
And so these are the scientific studies that are out there, and pink's disease was not a major problem in the United States. It was a major problem, I think, in Australia and a couple of other countries. And but, of course, now the children who got pink's disease many years ago, and now many of them are infertile. And it's directly related to the mercury that was in there. Could it be that that's why we're using mercury in the vaccines on children throughout the world? Aren't there just too many people out there, and little black children and brown children and yellow children? Well, I don't think so. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. David Aubin. It is so difficult for people to believe that this sort of thing could be going on in the world, and yet I would simply point out that I have personally talked to physicians from both the Philippines and from Kenya, who told me that, and both of them were associated with the vaccination programs that were brought forward by the World Health Organization, that were offering free tetanus immunizations to women of childbearing age, not to men of childbearing age, only to women of childbearing age. And you didn't take one tetanus immunization, you took three or four of them. Now, ordinarily, you take one tetanus immunization and that's it. So what was there that was so important about this immunization that, you know, you had to take a series of these shots? Ordinarily, it's a tetanus toxoid. It's the toxin and modified toxin that you develop an immunity so that if you get tetanus, you won't get lockjaw. And, of course, they found in both countries, and I understand this has been done in other countries as well, that the women who took these free shots put forward by the World Health Organization had multiple miscarriages or could not get pregnant and hold a pregnancy. And eventually, of course, they checked in both the Philippines and in Kenya. They checked the vaccines, and what do you think they found? They found a chorionic gonadotropin, which is a hormone that comes when you're pregnant and, of course, causes you then to abort in other words, you develop an immunity to the gonadotropin so that when you produce your own, why, of course, your body destroys it and you can't carry a pregnancy to term. When this was pointed out, what was going on, and there was a tremendous furor over in the Philippines, and there was a tremendous furor in Kenya, and you never heard a word of it here in the United States, why, they said, oh, must have been contamination. Shucks, how did that get in there? We would never do a thing like that. And then, of course, they discontinued the free tetanus shots for the women. I think that should be pretty well self-explanatory. And I think that you have to understand that there really are people who have a different agenda. And one of the major thrusts of their agenda is population control. Have you looked at all into that aspect of things, David?
With the tetanus vaccine, you
yes,
mean?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. In fact, when I finally came to the realization that the Gavi and then the NSSM 200 appeared to be on record, I mean, almost virtual, identical organizations, I then went to the PubMed, which is the medical version of Google, and I typed in anti-fertility vaccine, thinking, well, you know, I've never heard of anti-fertility vaccines, but you just wonder if there is some body of clinical medicine out there that I never heard of. And what I found, I just fell out of my chair. I mean, there's hundreds of peer-reviewed papers on anti-fertility vaccine. And wouldn't you know it, the first paper that I pulled has to do exactly with what you just said. This was published in Lancet in June 11th, 1988. And the paper is entitled Phase 1 Clinical Trial of a World Health Organization Birth Control Vaccine. Now remember, the World Health Organization was one of the agencies that was going to be enlisted by NSSM 200, the Kissinger Report, to reduce population. And it's also one of the players under the Gavi umbrella, the Bill Gates Association. The paper went on to describe how they had successfully completed a phase one trial, which is a study of a very small number of patients for safety and effectiveness, exactly what you just said, the human chorionic hormone attached to tetanus as a carrier.
Hold that thought, right? Be right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and then Dr. Aobis mentioning that he'd gone to onto Google, I guess he'd gone onto PubMed and typed in fertility vaccines. He'd found all sorts of papers on fertility vaccines, and one of the first papers he came across was a discussion of a World Health Organization study. It was a preliminary study, phase one study, where they'd actually created anti-fertility vaccine using a tetanus toxoid as a carrier. So pick up the story there, David.
Well, the study was clearly successful, and the authors of this paper claimed that in their eyes, I don't like to use the term, but the beauty of this device is that women would become pregnant without knowing it, for example, having, you know, sex without other protection, and would then very shortly abort the fetus, and they would never even know they were pregnant. They were pregnant. They didn't know they had a spontaneous abortion. So basically, in their mind, this was the perfect anti-fertility vaccine. Of course, it also means that it could be a stealth anti-fertility vaccine. If a woman doesn't know, and if she got this without her knowledge, then she really wouldn't know anything was going on, and she potentially would only present clinically as impaired fertility, and she wouldn't even know she was miscarrying. Now, what's really odd is, and I'm not sure exactly how I found this, but a week earlier in The Lancet, the same journal that published this phase one study, published a very small, short letter in a section that wasn't even in their peer review section. It was in their letters to the editor section from their Nigerian correspondent. And this little letter with no author states that there's a controversial population control measures going on in Nigeria. You know, there was fears that they were going to run out of resources and they were growing too fast and the usual, you know, spin. But the last sentence in that said this. It says, during the recent national immunization campaign, in some villages, women escaped and hid in the bushes thinking they were going to be given injections to stop them from having children. And they were referring to a tetanus toxoid injection program for pregnant women. So just as he said, it looks like the phase one trial was probably going into phase two or even phase three studies without the permission or knowledge of the participants, in this case, individuals in Nigeria. And I have firsthand, or closer to firsthand knowledge of similar events going on in Mexico, but in 94, Nicaragua in 93, and the Philippines in 1995. Now, you're right, the Philippines story is probably the best documented story. And one of the whistleblowers I actually met in Chicago on her trip for other sources, I mailed her because I saw her name on a document on the internet, and she mailed me back and asked to meet with me. And I met her, I think it was early last summer, in Chicago, just a wonderful woman who runs a pro-life organization in the Philippines, Sister Mary Pilar Versosa. And she was even in a film documentary done by the BBC in 1995 called The Human Laboratory. And she described exactly what you said, that the World Health Organization set up a program to vaccinate with really no sense, young women and pregnant women, and they were getting, now what do you normally get a tetanus shot, Dr. Stan? What, once every 10 years?
Yep.
Well, that's typical. They were giving three shots only to women in the first 30 days. They got five shots in the first year. Now, what's interesting, if when I read the clinical studies that looked at tetanus HCG anti-fertility vaccines, the authors claimed that one of the problems was they didn't get enough of a response with one injection, and that they have to give this in multiple injections spaced out over time, improved the response, the formation of antibodies to the intrinsic HCG. So it sounds like they were carrying out exactly what the laboratory scientists had recommended them to do this.
And, of course, this is a crime against humanity. It could be tried, by the International Court, Criminal Court. This is the sort of things that was outlawed in Nuremberg. And yet, of course, nothing is being done about it because these people are carrying out, in my opinion, the hidden agenda of the people who really rule the world. And they really do intend to kill off a large part of the world's population, initially by, of course, preventing them from being born. And down the line, they have a different agenda. Well, we're going to have to go to a break here. And, of course, I'd ask you to hold your calls because I think that Dr. Ayoub has so much information. And the thing is, here you have this National Security Study Memorandum that's calling for population control. And then you have an organization, Gavi, which is calling for vaccinating all the children. But what you find out is you have the same people pushing population control that are pushing worldwide vaccinations. Now, those are two opposite things. Vaccinations are supposed to, keep children healthy and prevent them from getting disease and dying. And population control is to limit the population and cut it dramatically. How can you correlate the two? We'll be back in just a moment to explore that. Great question. All right, David, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
Sure. The attempts with the anti-fertility vaccine with HCG, although they did work very effectively, they ended up not being, if they were are being used for stealth purposes, they weren't so great. And obviously the Philippines blew up in their face because there was widespread publicity in the Philippines, and the Philippine Medical Association, which would be equivalent of the American Medical Association here, made very bold statements in the press saying that this was an intentional contamination of vaccines, and there was a lot of backlash. So even though it was effective, the researchers obviously went back to the drawing board, and the current state of the art in anti-fertility vaccines is, I can only say, it's something out of a science fiction novel. Research, and a lot of this is done at the same locations, and probably the most active place is out of India. They are able to take, instead of putting an HCG hormone onto a vaccine carrier like tetanus, they're actually able to do naked DNA strands. And they can take that DNA and they can incorporate that in basically anything. They can put it inside a viral vaccine like the smallpox vaccine. They can put it even in food. They can put it in, there's a study that they're able to express HCG in tobacco. So the ways that you can, occultly give this to people without their knowledge is now probably beyond even a shot.
And probably in countries that are largely corn producing, many of the natives in Africa eat primarily corn or maize, and they do that in Mexico and many of the Latin American countries. See, all you have to do would be to get that that gene into the corn plants, wouldn't it?
You can get it in anything, it seems. And it'll either express the antibody directly or it'll express HCG. And the amount and the duration, it would basically be infinite. As long as the person would live, that DNA strand would constantly be read and a protein would be produced. So you would wonder if you could even reverse that process. You probably couldn't. But what really is frightening is that how could you possibly detect that? It would require an incredibly sophisticated laboratory to even know that something like that was ongoing. So
then, of course, if you found it, they would say, "Oh shucks, how did that get there? Why we would never put that there? After all, we're scientists and we're here to help humanity." And what people have to really understand is there's some people there who have a different agenda, who have no intention to help humanity. They want to destroy it. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. David Aub has been talking about the new methods by which they can actually, create these anti-fertility vaccines. And, of course, they certainly have gone far beyond the chorionatotrophin, which they were attaching to the tetanus toxoid and giving to third world countries throughout the world. And he's saying that now they can actually take a gene that will actually stimulate the anti-chorionatotrophic hormone in the individual, and they can put it into plants. They can put it into things like corn and into other plants, which when ingested, the woman would not be able to become pregnant. And how would you ever reverse that, though, Dr. Aub?
I have no idea how you would reverse that. I think the chances of it even being diagnosed, I mean, it would have to be an extremely sophisticated laboratory, and there's probably only a handful of these kind of laboratories in the world that would be able to detect, DNA sequencing in tissue, particularly specific for HCG. So it's beyond my expertise, there's no question about it, but this is not a light matter. I mean, there are extensive research papers on this. There are textbooks on reproductive immunology. There are journals of reproductive immunology. So this is a giant field, and you wonder, if this is going to be done for commercial purposes, why can't somebody go to a drugstore today and get an anti-fertility vaccine? Yet it's been in development for 30 years, and the phase one study was done over, 20 years ago? So you wonder, if they're putting this much money into this kind of research, why hasn't it come to fruition yet?
Why hasn't Rush Limbaugh told us about that?
he hasn't been told to tell us.
Right. That's the finest conservative money can buy. Go ahead, David. Well, really, I think that this is really rather frightening because the implications as far as the survival of humanity is at stake. They are experimenting with people throughout the world. In Russia today, the average male lives 58 years, and nobody can tell you why. Well, I'm sure that somebody could tell you why. They're not about to admit, though, a gigantic experiment on human beings. And they're experimenting on people all throughout the world today. And I believe they're experimenting on our children. And I think they're doing things that they know are harmful to them. I mean, the fact that over 67% of all communities in the United States have fluoridated water, knowing full well it decreases fertility, it lowers intelligence, it produces cancer, it attacks the endocrine system, it softens the bone, it produces premature menarche, it lowers sperm fertility, and on and on and on. And they know all of these things. It increases the incidence of heart attack in the original cities were fluoridated back in Newburgh, New York. Double the incidence of heart disease, but they never mentioned that. And how could you possibly do this in America? And the doctors don't know, and the dentists don't know, and the politicians don't know. Well, we've got a real problem in America, which is why I do what I do, and I'm sure why Dr. David Abe does what he does. So you pick up the story there, David.
Well, in trying to figure out whether something like this has been applied in the United States, it's a little hard. I have no proof. I haven't seen any proof, but there are some reasons for concern. We certainly live in a country that over the decades we've seen decrease in size of family or fertility. And there could be, in theory, a lot of reasons for that. People aren't getting married when they're, 16, 17 years old. Women are working. Wealth of the nation is greater than it was, 50, 60 years ago. But in addition to the fertility rates dropping, the infertility rates are clearly climbing. And I really, to this day, still am having trouble finding some solid figures at looking at the infertility rates. And that is a couple trying to achieve a pregnancy and failing. I think the definition is, 6 months or 12 months for a couple to be infertile? I think they have to try at least 6 months continuously without conceiving. But just, and this is anecdotal, but we have a residency and we've got, I think I did a head count about 8 of the male residents, every one of them has gone through infertility counseling, 100%. Now, maybe it's the fluoride is very high in Springfield, Illinois. It's certainly possible. But we know that there's infertility as a subspecialty is growing. The OB-GYNs are taking that up as a specialty, and we're seeing advertisements in magazines and so forth. So I don't think there's any question that at least there's a general sense that infertility rates are climbing. There are a few studies that perhaps suggest that autoimmunity has some role in infertility, and by autoimmunity, it may be a specific autoimmunity like antibodies versus the ovary, or in a general sense, there's a non-specific autoantibody elevation like you would measure in conditions like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. But I did find a couple of studies, and I can quote here. One of these was published in a neuroendocrinology letter, and this is a 2005 study. This study looked at treatment of autoimmune damage in adolescent girls, and they actually found in women who had menstrual disorders of varying kind, they found that 100% of them had antibodies to the ovarian tissue. And in controls, and with women with normal menstrual cycles, only 6.7%. And they found several studies like that that found a relatively high incidence of autoimmune disease in women who had a general complaint, sometimes non-specific complaints, menstrual complaints, and obviously infertility symptoms as well. And that's really odd because if you go to the standard textbooks that talk about infertility causes, you'll never see antibodies aren't even listed. It's usually, pelvic inflammatory disease in women, for example, or general ovulatory disorders, which really aren't defined clearly, but just that they know that they test and the women aren't ovulating normal, and the male infertility is a very high incidence. So there does seem to be this underlying prevalence of autoimmunity that is just striking and surprising. And, for example, I sent you the paper in the Geyers that looked at hepatitis B vaccine and autoimmunity. They specifically didn't look at infertility. They looked at other more well-defined or well-known autoimmune conditions like diabetes, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, optic neuritis, and so forth. But now I have to consider that infertility may very well be an autoimmune condition. And, you know, the studies aren't done. I think the research could be done, and I think the VAERS database may be one way to look at that. And as I said, with the flu vaccine, we found several cases of spontaneous abortion, but I did find several cases where women did claim after a variety of vaccines they were unable to conceive. That doesn't in no means means it's cause and effect, but at least it's out there and it may be able to be studied in something in a more of a controlled fashion.
But, you know, I think it's frightening when we see what's happening to fertility in Europe. I mean, in France, I think it's 1.4 children per family. In Russia, 1.2 children per family, about that. In the Soviet Union today, Russia is losing about 1 million people a year of their population. And if it weren't for the influx of people coming from Muslim countries, why, their country would be simply fading away. Certainly, you know, the same thing is certainly true in Italy. 50 years from now, population of Italians will be minuscule, and of course, unless they allow massive Muslim immigration into their country, why, certainly the whole economy will collapse. Certainly this is happening in Japan today. They're just not having any children, so there's nobody, of course, working and paying into the Social Security system. And the young people are not having children, and of course, the a generation, two generations from now, Japan, which of course discourages immigration, will cease to exist as a major nation. People don't understand what's happening. There is a population control agenda, and it is being very effectively prosecuted or pushed throughout the world today. And the average person has no idea what's happening.
No. And you even have to wonder if an individual like Bill Gates, even though his background is supporting things like abortion, really knows the details of what potentially might be going on with the vaccine program beneath him. But, and in fact, ultimately, the only people that really know are the people that are manufacturing these products. And these contaminants may be added after the manufacturing process, potentially. I mean, they could happen between, you know, manufacture and where it's delivered for eventual utilization. So I don't know.
But there is a population control agenda. They do intend to limit fertility. On one end, they intend, I believe, you know, right now, of course, people are living longer and longer, but I don't think that's going to continue. I think that when you get Alzheimer's disease, why, your longevity begins to decrease. And I think that they're frightened to death. They're going to be too many older people. How are you going to get rid of the useless eaters? One way would, of course, to give them Alzheimer's disease. And when you get 1,000% increase in Alzheimer's disease after the influenza shot, you have to ask yourself, why is the CDC recommending that? Any sort of a shot that does very little good and increases the incidence of Alzheimer's disease 1,000%, you'd think that somebody might say, maybe what they're doing on purpose.
Right. Now, mercury is very clearly tied to, you know, what proportion of Alzheimer's, I don't know, but the it's very interesting. The pathophysiology or the kinetics of mercury in autism and Alzheimer's are nearly identical. In other words, the subset of individuals who ultimately get Alzheimer's or ultimately get autism have, in general, a genetic inability to handle the mercury. And that's very easy to measure. If you do fingernail or hair analysis on these susceptible groups, you'll find out, and the hair and nails, by the way, represents what the body can normally excrete. It's the measure of the efficiency of the body has to get rid of mercury. You'll find that the mercury is paradoxically low in these individuals. Yet, if you measure what's being bound to the tissue, and short of doing a biopsy, the best way to do that is to use a chelating agent and measure a urine or stool after a 6-hour, 24-hour period of giving this chelation agent. And what you see, the same individuals who have almost no mercury in their fingernails or hair, it pours out in their urine and stool when you give them this provocative agent. So basically, they have a genetic susceptibility not to be able to bind and eliminate mercury as well. And those are the individuals that are first in line to get the disease with the exposure.
And so we've talked to Dr. Boyd Haley, a professor of chemistry at the University of California, University of Kentucky, and he has confirmed the fact that experimentally, the lesion that you get with Alzheimer's disease is specifically related to mercury, and they can actually produce that same lesion, in people, or at least in tissue cultures with mercury that you see in the patient. So, and of course, the other interesting thing is, as he's tried to continue his experiments and his studies on this, the National Institute of Health refuses to fund him. They always funded all of his studies before, until he began looking into the relationship between Alzheimer's disease and dental fillings and mercury. And at that point, they just simply cut him off. And, of course, if you can cut off scientific research, then you can cut off our understanding or the ability to try to verify this scientifically. And you have to ask yourself, what is the government afraid of? Why would they cut off funding to those scientists, not simply to Dr. Boyd Haley, but as he pointed out, every scientist he knows is trying to study the toxic effect on mercury on the brain and its relationship to Alzheimer's disease. All of that funding has been stopped by our government.
That's right. I mean, once I think you realize that it is potentially a purposeful movement to push these kind of toxins on the people, all of a sudden these measures, these statements, these publications from the CDC, the funding from the NIH, it all makes sense. Everything, in my mind, becomes much clearer. They're acting purposely. They don't want the answer. They know the answers. As I think Einstein said, the same person that created the problem cannot solve the problem.
And if any of you would like to verify what I've said, we actually have a couple of 4-tape sets, including a number of my interviews with Dr. Boyd Haley, where he will tell you exactly what I have just told you that now, his results of his scientific work, and then, of course, the effort to stifle it by cutting off government grants to his university. So these things happen. They are coordinated by people of great power and great influence and great wealth, who have a different worldview, who have a different agenda. And I believe one of the major things going on behind everything today is the population control agenda. So so many things happened there about 1972, 1974. It was 1972 that the Club of Rome came out with a book called The Limits of Growth that talked about how we were running out of coal, and we're running out of oil, and we're running out of water, and we're running out of natural resources, and we've got to start limiting the world population. They came up with the term sustainable development. The first Earth Summit was held in 1972, headed by Marie Strong. And ever since then, there's been this coordinated effort on the part of the elite to bring about world population control, 1972, 1974, and then continuing since that time. Well, David, where do we stand as far as this worldwide vaccination program? They seem to have unlimited funds. Are they progressing with this? Are the people in the third world countries suspicious? Do they begin to suspect that maybe they do not have their best interests at heart?
Well, I think there are some lone voices in those nations, South Africa, the Philippines, that know pretty much what's going on. But unfortunately, just as it is here, they're victim to a very successful, well-funded propaganda program. So most of the individuals in these nations run to the vaccines. It's kind of the bullets that you normally would run away from, but they're running to these. And unfortunately, it's still widely believed that the vaccines are a godsend and they're going to improve their health. But in fact, we know that the health of the third world, just like our health, is deteriorating every year.
I would simply point out, and we simply point that out in my population control agenda monograph, and we have the studies on this, that in third world countries, there are 2 billion people who either have or have had hepatitis B. Now, there are about 375 million who have active hepatitis B, and the rest, of course, their bodies have been able to take care of it. Literally every child in the third world countries either has or has had hepatitis B. It's very, very prevalent. And the question is, how did they get it? They got it through the use of dirty needles in the process of vaccination. You would think that these smart people, smart enough to get the vaccines, be smart enough to use clean needles, but I guess they're just not. They say they're just too expensive. It may cost a dollar or more for the vaccine, but they can't afford a couple of cents for a clean needle. And you have to ask yourself, how could anybody be this stupid unintentionally?
You're right. I did find that reference and confirm those numbers. They estimated 21 million cases of hepatitis B, 2 million cases of hepatitis C, and over a quarter of a million cases of HIV due to the injections. Sharing needles, or is it in the needles? Is it in the syringe solutions? You can't really tell the difference.
Well, I think that it's so vitally important that our listeners out there don't just scoff. Check these facts out. And, of course, my talk on the planned population control rejection, and certainly Dr. Ayoub's articles and his latest article, hopefully will be coming out very soon, on the influenza shots recommended by the CDC in first trimester abortion, pardon me, first trimester of pregnancy, pointing out that all the papers that the CDC uses to justify the position don't justify the position. But nobody, of course, is pointing that out. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Ayoub to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, David, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I'd be happy to send individuals who are interested a CD-ROM that has my reference material, including a copy of my lecture, but all those documents we talked about, the NSSM 200 and the Rockefeller Commission report. I think, you know, you have to see it for yourself to believe it. And these documents do exist. They're high-level government documents. And I'd be happy to send them out to anyone who mails me and would give me their snail mail address, and I will mail you a CD-ROM.
All right, and far as how will they get in touch with you?
They can email me at raypoke, R-A-Y-P-O-K-E, at mac.com, M-A-C.com. That's raypoke, R-A-Y-P-O-K-E, at mac, M-A-C.com.
All right, fine. Well, I hope people will get that. We actually have the disc, and we think it's excellent, excellent source of information. You'll see a lot of these original scientific papers and documentation on this whole incredible scenario. Is it true? If it is true, then people are dying throughout the world unnecessarily. Women are not being allowed to conceive without their knowledge or consent, and there truly is a diabolical agenda going on. So I would simply challenge you to check out Dr. Ayoub's information and find out if it's true. And if it is true, then get involved, because if you're not involved, who will be? And if not now, when? So, all right, David, well, we certainly appreciate you being with us again. You know, it's been a real pleasure to have you. We've got about a minute for you to wrap up the program.
Well, I would advise individuals who get a flu vaccine, if they feel that this is essential for health, make sure that you ask the doctor to get a vaccine without mercury. Some of them are available. They've actually sold out for this season for adults, but for infants, there's clearly plenty of thimerosal-free vaccine available. And make sure you see yourself the package insert and not trust the doctor to tell you that there's no mercury in these vaccines, because they are still in there. Few doctors know that it even exists in vaccines.
And the difficulty is that the doctors don't know. You're going to have to get educated. And, you know, if you really care, you're going to inform your doctor. He may be skeptical at first, but insist that he, you know, get hold of a Dr. Ayoub's CD, get the scientific papers, print them out, give it to them. Ask him, you know, would you really want to hurt anybody? And, of course, the doctor's going to say, of course not. Well, then check this out. Could it possibly be that what you're not getting in your medical journals is that what you're getting in medical journals is not true? What you're hearing at your meeting is not true? At least check the facts out and decide for yourself. It's all up on the Internet. The information is there. You need to get it. Well, David, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure, Dr. Steele.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. If you'd like to get the CD that Dr. Ayoub offers, if you simply email him at raypoke, R-A-Y-P-O-K-E, at mac.com. That's raypoke, R-A-Y-P-O-K-E, at mac.com. And simply ask him for the CD. He'll mail that to you free of charge. And it really will give you the background, all sorts of scientific papers, backing up the information he's gathered. And believe me, he's done a tremendous job, and it's your job out there. It's your job to get this information and to get it to your doctor and say, look, if I'm crazy, you got nothing to worry about. But if I'm right, you're hurting your patients. Would you do that intentionally? And, of course, your doctors maybe might accept your challenge and begin looking into it and find out that he's been lied to. And who knows? It might be, well, like happened to me 43 years ago. And somebody described in a little poem, it said, upon one man's life it has fallen, a light that doth not depart. And a look or word he hath spoken wrought a flame in another man's heart. And that's how I got started. I heard what somebody said, and it lit a flame in my heart. And, well, it's been an exciting 43 years, I can promise you that. So your job is to check out and find out what we're saying is true. If it is, then to begin to reach others and get them to understand that America is under attack today. And there is a diabolical population control agenda. And, of course, no man's life or family or children are safe. Find out if it's really true. Understand what they're doing with the influenza vaccine. Understand what they've done with the childhood vaccines. Understand what they're doing to children throughout the world. Understand what they're doing with their anti-fertility vaccines. And the trouble is, we don't know whether that's going to be in the food we're eating or not. There really are diabolical and evil people out there who have a different worldview. And that, of course, is the recurrent theme here at Radio Liberty. We ask you to go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet directly or on the other networks we're on. You can listen to us 4 hours a day on shortwave, 9 hours a day on Telstar 5 and some of the other satellites. You can get our programming. But get the information, check it out, evaluate it, and then hopefully you'll join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation, or any nation conceived under God, can long endure. Now, we ask you to tell others about our radio programs. We ask you to copy our newsletters, which are available on our website, and pass them out. You have our permission to copy into the videos or audio tapes we've made and pass them out, as long as you're not making a profit with them. And then we ask you to tell others about our programs. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, if you wonder why the cost of natural gas and of electricity and of gasoline and diesel and fuel oil is going up, you need to read our newsletter, Peak Oil 2, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like to get information on Iraq, just call and ask for Deja Vu in Iraq, and then Pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until, well, it'll be tomorrow at the same time. May the Lord be with you.